Professor Anne Brassel, thanks for taking the interview and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Ioane.
Family Planning New South Wales, when did it start and why?
Family Planning New South Wales has a long history. It's as of last year, it was 90 years old, and we had fantastic celebrations about our history. The reason family planning started all those years ago is because women were in great need of choices in relation to the timing and spacing of their children, and a group of very experienced health professionals and others got together to really ensure that women were able to make informed choices about their reproductive and sexual health and their rights, and particularly focusing on access to contraception in those days. And it was the very early days of contraception.
That's... You're telling me that 90 years ago, the issue of contraception and women's rights with regards to having children and raising families were discussed even then.
Yes, absolutely. I myself have a very strong Irish Catholic background, and I myself am one of eight, and my father was one of eight, and families before them had very large families. So I think the issue of timing and spacing of children, as you're sort of trying to come to grips with your need for education and the need for income to support your family, have been around for a very, very long time. But I think around that stage, there were more options in terms of contraception, and the people involved were very keen to provide women with all the choices available.
That's very progressive, isn't it?
In the day it was. They were very brave and courageous, because a lot of issues, of course, talking about the sensitive matters around sexuality were very taboo. So they were extraordinary people, but they were very focused on improvements in public health and decreasing maternal mortality, increasing infant lifespans, because infant mortality in those days was terrible. You know, you had no sense when your baby was born that it would live to be five in those days. So there are a lot of good reasons why women were wanting to increase the spacing between their children as well.
And this was mainly by women for women?
Look, some of the really powerful people involved in those days were also men. They were male doctors and male advocates who were really concerned about their own families as well, and those families that they had come into contact with. So it wasn't just women. Contraception, I personally see as never women's business in its own right. It's about families.
Now, most people then think of family planning as simply or synonymous with birth control. Is that all it is?
Oh, no, it's much more complicated than that, of course. We're quite a complex business. Family planning is a term that is variously understood by many, many people, and a lot of people do believe that it's about contraception. And contraception is very, very important to what we do. But we work in the area of reproductive and sexual health and rights. So that's an enormous number of issues and conditions. One of the areas we also work on is cervical cancer, and working to train medical and nursing professionals in screening and prevention of cervical cancer. We work in the area of STIs. We work in the areas of fertility and infertility. You'd appreciate that, you know, when people are having difficulty having babies, mm-hmm. that they need good advice around, you know, their options and where they should go for those sorts of services. We're also advocates for people having the choice to have make any choice in relation to their pregnancy. So we're advocates for not only keeping the baby, but also adopting the baby, and for having an abortion if that's the choice that people want to make. And they're very, very sensitive issues. And we're also involved in a whole lot of other issues. For instance, we're involved with sex education and looking at what that needs to look like at a community level as well, both in schools, for kids, for parents, and education of a whole series of other providers who are providing advice about sex ed and issues in relation to sexual and reproductive health.
So we are going back, for our listeners, STI is sexually transmitted infections.
Yes, sexually
transmitted infections. You know, just to sum that up, and you also advocate for the rights of women to make choices.
Yes, that's right.
On whether to continue the pregnancy, to terminate the pregnancy, adopt the baby.
That's right.
What about issues like the economics of family planning?
Yeah.
Does the population growth have anything to do with your work? I mean, what I'm looking at is, you know, there are some families who can barely afford to feed one child, let alone 10.
Look, I think it's a very, very complex issue, and we as an organisation are a health organisation, so we provide excellent clinical services, we provide education to health professionals and teachers and other people, and we do research, evidence-based research in these areas. So we certainly don't have a lens on this for the purposes of population control or, you know, stopping population growth. We have a lens on this around people's health. And we know that if a woman has, for instance, pregnancy after pregnancy, then her life expectancy is a lot less because of the complications of multiple pregnancies over short periods of time. We also know that children who have smaller gaps between the numbers of children in the family, we also know the infant mortality in those families is much higher. We also know that when families are smaller, the capacity for the individual children to be educated, and indeed for the mothers to work themselves and the fathers to be educated and work in higher paid employment is much higher. So with smaller families, you've got a much longer life expectancy for all members of the family. You've got much more access to education. You've got, therefore, better access to higher paid jobs and often more satisfying jobs because they're not just jobs in the labour market only. People can make their choices about that. So one of the really important side effects of good reproductive and sexual health is that people become more prosperous at the same time.
And it's also empowers women in the sense that they can go to work or they can study or they can do other things.
Absolutely. And well, look, since Pussy was a cat, girls have been getting pregnant when they're quite young. And whether people, you know, accept that or not, it's just a fact. By educating girls about contraception and about their reproductive and sexual health and even going, you know, getting them to understand how babies are made and getting young men to understand this too, then they can make decisions about when they start a family, and that has massive implications, particularly for the young, about their access to education, because it's a great challenge to have a baby and to continue your education. Some remarkable people do that, and absolutely hats off to them, but it does make it a lot more difficult if you're up all night looking after a baby and you've got very poor income and your resources have to then really just focus on management of small children when you're very young yourself.
When you speak about young people and their sexuality, I mean, many of them become sexually active at a very young age without any information on responsibilities, for example, around issues like contraception and condoms.
Absolutely. Look, I think in New South Wales, we have very, very good sex education in schools. So, and it's very, very age appropriate. So when they're in primary school, they start having conversations about being safe and being in safe situations. And as they progress through to the latter parts of primary school, they learn about how their body works, they learn about periods, and they learn about how babies are made. And then when they get into high school, they start learning about respectful relations and relationships and responsible choices. They start learning about how to protect themselves from having sexually transmitted infections, and also the conversations start about how to negotiate good consensual relationships with people. The one thing we absolutely have to open our eyes to is that young people go through puberty, often when they're quite young these days. They always go through puberty in their teens, but the ages of puberty are becoming quite young. So they're starting to feel the emergence of their own sexuality. And by not having information of that, about that and what's happening to their body, and what's happening to their sense of sexual drive, that makes it very difficult for them because they might find themselves in situations that they don't know how to handle.
Professor Bressel, there's another issue. Now that you've touched on sexuality in young people, there's been in recent years a lot of concern about young males and access to pornography online. Is that an area that family planning can get into with regards to sex education?
Look, pornography has been around since, again, pussy was a cat. And I think it's just part of how our society works. And young people are always very interested to find out information that they, particularly information that they feel is a little bit taboo. So as part of their sex education, there hopefully are conversations about getting good information and getting reliable information sources and challenging some of the things that they see on the internet. So family planning does talk about those issues, particularly to teachers and to parents. We also, depending upon the service we're providing at any point in time, we also do quite a lot of work around men and boys and looking at their development and working with men and boys to make good decisions about respectful relationships. I guess the take-home message on this is that we want people to have really respectful relationships between men and women, and we want them to be thoughtful about the way that they're engaging in sexual reading and in thinking about themselves.
The Catholic Church is renowned for discouraging the use of condoms and contraceptives amongst its followers.
Yeah.
What's the attitude of family planning to that?
Look, coming from a Catholic background myself, and I sent my children to Catholic schools, I'm very committed to issues around faith. There's a great deal of difference between what happens at the Catholic hierarchical level and what happens at a community level. As I said to you earlier, I'm one of eight children, and all of my siblings and I have had very small families. I think there is a great deal of acceptance in the Catholic community about the need for contraception, and there's a great deal of uptake around contraception. So I think there's quite a dissonance between what might be said by the church hierarchy and what really happens on the ground. And we have very, very big and forthright Catholic communities. So you rarely see those big families anymore. And might I suggest it's not because they're not sexually active. They're taking contraception and they're managing the timing and spacing of their children. I think there's a little bit of a different issue in relation to condoms, though. Condoms themselves, the best impact of condoms is in the reduction of sexually transmitted infections. And to discourage the use of condoms in a world where sexually transmitted infections, sorry, I was going to say STIs, sexually transmitted infections are so rife, we need to encourage young people to protect themselves from the transmission of those diseases because some of them have dreadful consequences. So I think the Catholic community does use contraception. That's well known amongst the Catholic community, and there's a high use of contraception across all communities in our country. But I also would specifically advocate for the use of condoms for protection from infections.
Now, you do some work, some training with countries in the Pacific region.
Yes, we do.
Including Samoa.
Yes.
Does that training include issues that we've just covered here, like women's rights, the right to work, the importance of spanning the time between children, between births? I think you're recommending 2 years. I'm saying this because only last week the Prime Minister of Samoa has come out and blamed family planning for the slow growth in population, and also blamed the fact that women are becoming too educated and becoming too ambitious?
Look, we run an international development program in the Pacific Island nations. We don't actually provide a service in Samoa itself, though we are very we know the people who run the family health associations in Samoa, and they're great people. But at present time, we don't have a program in Samoa. When we work in country with the local communities, our approach is to do capacity building. So we don't go in there and provide services. We go in there and work with the people in country to provide them with the additional skills to deliver those services. So we might be working with nurses to provide them with information about the latest contraceptive choices and train them in the use of those. So, for instance, we might have some injectables that you can have in your arm, and we might teach them how to do that. On the other hand, they might want us to work on cervical cancer screening, because the cervical cancer death rates in a lot of the Pacific Island countries are very, very high compared to Australia, and they shouldn't be. With effective screening programs, you can really reduce the death rates from cervical cancer. In other countries where there are issues around consent and choice, we might be running men and boys behaviour change programs, mm-hmm. where we're teaching men and boys to come together to talk about their masculinity and how they can make great decisions and be really effective within the family about providing a leadership role in good decision making around issues of reproductive and sexual health. That might come down to encouraging women who are pregnant to go to all the pre-birth classes and also have their babies in hospitals or with a skilled birth attendant rather than doing these things by themselves. So it depends on the country is the very short answer. But absolutely, absolutely, if a country identified that it had issues in relation to the uptake or the acceptance of contraception, we would work with the professionals in that country to provide them with the support and additional resources to be able to tackle those issues, because we strongly believe that families are healthier when they have access to good reproductive and sexual health. When they have less children, the life expectancy of the women increases and of the children increases. They have more access to education. They have therefore more access to fulfilling work and better income, and family planning is the start of the solution. It's not the problem.
Professor Anne Bressel, thank you very much for your time, and it was very nice talking to you.
You too. Thank you, Yanni.